I'm Alex Rice, and I run the product security team at Facebook. I'm going to talk today about some work that a large number of Facebook engineers have been working on over the past year and a half or so to get rid of something that we all hate. First, I'm going to figure out how to make slides advance. There we go. I probably don't need to get into too much detail about why passwords are terrible and why the whole web authentication model of username and password is broken, especially following Ellen's talk, where she went into a lot of detail around everything that can go wrong here. It basically boils down to, at some point, someone other than your user is going to get a hold of that username and password, either through a phishing site, giving it up, or far more commonly, sharing it between a bunch of sites. Of course, you're going to use the same password for your bank account, your Facebook, and all your favorite porn sites. That's just what users do. So, someone's going to end up getting it, and one of these logins, something about it isn't going to look normal to you. Maybe it's obviously suspicious, like somebody randomly logging in from Eastern Europe when they normally don't. Could be as simple as it's just a new login. You haven't seen that device or that IP address before. You don't have as much confidence in that as the address or the machine that they've been using for a long period of time. Doesn't necessarily mean it's malicious. It's different. So you want to have a little more confidence in that login, or you'd hope to have a little more confidence in that login. But to enable this, you need to provide some type of challenge beyond the password. You've already decided that this initial password isn't good enough, and we want to try to do a little bit better. And you end up having to make a decision at some point around, like, where on this scale am I going to start challenging people? Am I going to challenge them on every single new login? The unusual ones, like maybe they're logging in at 3 a.m. and they don't normally log in at 3 a.m. Or the like extremely suspicious ones, like logging in from Eastern Europe from a new device. All of those challenges come with trade-offs. At Facebook, we're at a point where we challenge not a large percentage of our logins per day. But we have over 1 billion logins a day coming into our service. So this percentage works out to somewhere north of 700,000 challenges per day. Those aren't necessarily all malicious or even suspicious. It might just be a new login, and we feel like testing a little bit to see, is this login a little more is this more suspicious than it should be? Let's try a small challenge here. And where we end up on this scale is we tune our login classifiers with an exceptionally high false positive rate, which is completely the inverse of all the other classifiers that we train, where normally you want a very, very low false positive rate. It's not uncommon for us to run login classifiers that have an accuracy of 5%, meaning every time they make a decision, they're wrong 95% of the time. So we're challenging these logins knowing that 95% of the time it's probably the real user and we're wrong and we're just wasting their time. But that gives us the ability to catch the 5% of logins when it is actually right, because it's incredibly important to catch those. But you can't do that unless you have a challenge that doesn't cause you to lose some percentage of those logins that are getting challenged. 700,000 logins a day, you start losing some percentage of those users, and you're going to be in a pretty bad place pretty quickly. So what this ends up looking like in our actual site, the way it's implemented in the product, is you go to sign into Facebook, and instead of jumping right into your newsfeed, you hit this step where we'd like to ask the user to verify their account. You're signing in from a location we're not familiar with. For your protection, please just take a second and answer some security questions. So let's take a look at some of the challenges that we have. If you've ever seen the Facebook login form, there's not a lot of data that we, or the registration form, there's not a lot of data that we ask for. It's a name, not much of a challenge. Email address is also not much of a challenge because we just asked for it right above the password. And your birthday. So this is the default security challenge that we have for all users on the site. Everyone is guaranteed to have some birthday value in their account. It's one of the few required fields in our registration flows. The problem with birthdays is people don't remember them. People put the wrong one in. People change their year because they want to appear older on their Facebook profile than they are. That's a very small number of users, but enough people have trouble solving this challenge that you start to worry about it. Even if only 5% of the people can't get past this challenge for whatever reason, you start to hit some friction. They're also horribly insecure as a challenge mechanism for a wide variety of reasons. The first of which is the shared password problem that we mentioned before. Soon after we started rolling this out, we started finding a particular phishing botnet that would, after they got hit with this challenge, try to log into the user's email account using the same password that they're trying to log into the Facebook account. If that's successful, they then scrape that user's email searching for birthday. And by just looking at the email that comes back, they can get very close to getting a good guess about what the user's birthday is. So we think we can do better than this. The second thing that we used to ask for was we prompted everyone for security questions on Facebook. Back when we first started doing this, so we've stopped about a year ago, but back when we first started doing this, the default security question was, who is your third grade teacher? This is an actual Bing image search result for third grade teacher. I don't know who's responsible for that, but good work. Ellen saved me the trouble of going into why security questions are terrible. But ignoring all of their security problems, these fare worse, far worse than birthday in that people don't remember them. Either because they typoed what they were entering or they forgot who their third grade teacher was, might not have been as memorable as this one. And you end up losing people and not getting as much protection as you'd actually like. So moving on from what they know, which there's not a whole lot that we can use there. Like beyond their password, we don't have a lot else, that many other shared secrets between us and the user. So then we fall back on what else does the user have? Classic authentication. The email address is one of the obvious things that a user has. The way this challenge ends up working is we send out an email to the user's email address with some code in it. We ask them to go get the email address and then come back and punch the code into Facebook. It's the same shared password problem that we were just talking about, where if someone is sharing the password between their Facebook and their email account, they're going to get in and get that right away. There's also an unexpected amount of friction here. Asking someone to go to their email account before they can get into your site causes you to lose an unexpected number of users in that flow. Maybe it doesn't seem that heavyweight. Like, just go to your email. You're probably already signed in anyway. But not everyone is signed into their email. And saying, like, oh, before you get into your Facebook, go sign into your Gmail or go sign into your Hotmail, and then wait for this email to arrive and copy and paste the code back over into here, it's just not an ideal flow. And the shared password problem just gets us right back where we started. Similar to email, we have the same basic out-of-band model on a mobile phone. If a user has given us a mobile device, you can send a code to that phone and wait for them to put the code back into Facebook. This is actually pretty good. Like this is a reasonable amount of security, but still hits the same friction problem. Even far worse than email in some rare scenarios where you'll have SMS delivery delays up to 6 hours or more. SMS is just not the most reliable and prompt means of delivery all the time. We also don't have mobile phones for enough of our users. It's with a billion users, some number of them are not going to have mobile phones. It's not even a question of prompting them for those mobile devices, they simply don't have them. We also have credit cards for a large number of users, and that's something that they could have that they could prove to us, but Turns out that asking for a financial instrument in the middle of a suspicious login is somewhat suspicious in its own right. And we paused that pretty quickly. Even a classic two-factor authentication. I'll jump a bit more into this at the end, but this is probably the ideal state, is to have like some type of trusted hardware that the user happens to be carrying on them at all times and is accessible, and they can just punch in the code whenever we challenge their login. Rolling out classic two-factor authentication to a billion users, let alone a million users, is a exceptionally difficult logistics problem. It's just there's just no way we can possibly pull that off. Maybe for some percentage of our users, but it's just not usable at the scale we're talking about. So the question we started to ask ourselves after all our users got annoyed with all our challenges, and then our growth team gets annoyed with all our challenges because too many users are not completing the challenge flow, we started trying to figure out, who does the user know? Rather than asking what they know or what they have, it's who they know. We experimented with quite a few different flows here, because there's a lot of ways you can go about approaching this problem, and there's a lot of social data on a site like Facebook that you could potentially use to try to get that person to prove they are who they say they are based on their knowledge of their own personal social graph. The flow we had the most success with was one that looked like this. It kind of takes the form of a game. We need to verify that you're the owner. In order to proceed, please identify the people that are tagged in the following series of photos here. You know, presenting a few photos, you tag the face that you want the user to identify, and you give them a radio drop-down of the possible names to guess from. We make them do this 5 times, and interestingly, we tell them they can't get any wrong, which is a complete lie. You can actually get one or two wrong based on how much confidence we have here. But when we told people that, they just jumped through it far too quickly. When we were honest and upfront at the start about how many you could get wrong, people did not invest as much time into trying to figure out who this person actually was. The minute that you tell somebody, our actual wording is, to proceed to pass, you cannot get any answers wrong. The minute you tell someone that they need a perfect score on their test, they pause for a second and they make sure that they get each of them right. That also ends up driving people towards the I'm not sure option down there, which is a perfectly valid answer. I don't know who this person is much better than guessing wrong about who the other person is. I don't quite understand all the reasons behind why that happens, but it's just absolutely fascinating to me that something as small as lying to the user about how many answers they can get wrong makes the difference between a successful pass rate through this challenge and not. Before we started doing this, we were having a huge amount of trouble getting the accuracy rates to where we needed them to be. There's some issues with identifying photo tags. This is a friend of mine who has a whole album dedicated to his World of Warcraft character, and he tags himself in all of them. This is not actually him, although he might believe it to be. There's another friend of mine who works in LA and is good friends with a makeup artist at Universal Studios. And this was his Halloween costume a few years back, which is a complete rubber mask. He looks absolutely nothing like this. There is absolutely no way that even close friends would be able to identify him in this picture. They would have to start guessing based on the names that are there. Which is a slightly different take on the other one, where it's like, obviously not a person whatsoever. This is a person and clearly tagged, just happens to not look like the person that it actually is in this context. And you'll be surprised how many photos this actually comes up in, from obscured faces or shadows or turned to the side. It's not always immediately obvious who the person actually is. There's another good example of that where it's clearly a person tagged, but you can't quite see the face there. You might be able to make out some features, but it's not enough for everyone to be able to identify that photo. So this is where we spend the most engineering work on this whole authentication challenge, is selecting the right set of photos to present to the user. And it's a lot harder than it sounds. People are pretty good at recognizing the actual face, but what it really comes down to is context around that photo. We do use face detection, but it's not an incredibly face detection as in just like recognizing that there's a face there, which is a slightly different concept from facial recognition, which is identifying exactly whose face that is. To try to just weight those photos a little bit lower, but we don't completely remove them. We look for recent photos and weight those a little bit higher. We look for active and close friends, photos that you uploaded yourself, users that are also tagged in the album, or that scenarios where you also commented on that album. So from those three examples that I just gave, the World of Warcraft one is very easy for me to recognize. Even though I can't tell who's actually tagged in that, me and my friends spent a lot of time on that album making fun of our friend for posting World of Warcraft pictures. I was highly engaged with that photo, and I remember it very well. And so even though I can't, there's no face in it, the rest of the stuff in our selection process tries to decide that, like, Alex is probably gonna remember this photo because he liked a bunch of them and commented on them, and they spent a lot of time here. In the Halloween example, that was in a Halloween party that I was also at. I'm also tagged in the same album. I've commented on other photos in that album. Even though his face isn't the face that I think it is, it's not his real face, I can still easily identify that photo because I have the social context around that photo to make a very close guess at who it is if I don't already know who it is. And at the very least, I would know who else was at that party or hopefully recognize them. The ninja one there is a photo that I uploaded. And if I took the photo of you and spent the time to upload it, I'm probably going to remember who was in that photo that I took and uploaded. And so all these things taken together then weigh each photo, and we try to take the photo selection from that criteria. Just randomly selecting photos across the board was just led to disaster. Did not work at all. So you're probably thinking about some of the cases where this kind of falls apart. And it falls apart in more than one way. Let's try to jump into a few of those. First one here is kind of interesting from a security perspective, but I'm a white dude. Got a lot of white friends. I have a few that aren't. Occasionally they show up in a challenge here, and if you take a look at the names up there, the top four are very obvious Anglo-Saxon white people names. The bottom two are not. And just by taking that alone, you probably have pretty close to a 50-50 chance of guessing this right. 50-50 by itself is not a very good pass rate for a security challenge. Just flip a coin, you're into the account. Doesn't really work like that. You could even get a little more accurate here by taking more background into this. Like, one of those is a Malaysian name, one of them is an Indian name. You can narrow that down even further based on a little bit more characteristics. And then we started to look at how you could fix stuff like this, and they all start to get into very shady, legal territory. So we decided not to fix it, and to instead account for there are going to be some photos that are easily guessable, and you have to try to pick the right number of challenges that are appropriate for you based both on your confidence in your original login classifier and how many photos you're prompting for, which is usually about 4 to 5 for us. And so keeping that in mind, we will overestimate slightly, expecting some percentage of these photos to be easily guessed. Sometimes it's not even a 50-50 coin flip. This is Max Kelly. He works at Facebook. He has a lot of photos on Facebook. And our photo algorithm picked out two photos that both have his name in the photo. The first one's pretty blatant. The second one is kind of hidden behind somebody's head. But this also happens. The dude's name is in the photo. Doesn't take much to figure out who is probably tagged in this photo here. And if, again, the solution to this is the same as the one before. You can also spot my head right in the top photo up there, which is just another supporting bit on why this photo ends up getting selected. I'm also tagged in this photo, which is why our algorithm thinks that this is a good photo to show me. I can see the back of my head in it. Never mind that the name's in the back. So again, you have to plan for some of these to be crackable. You also hit a category of users that have a lot of friends that may not be close friends. And some of our selection criteria gets rid of these naturally. Some examples of these are like people who you're playing, you've friended to play Mafia Wars with, or some type of game on Facebook. You're probably not interacting with them in the same way as you would normal people, your actual close friends. And so some of this kind of weeds itself out, but it's still something that we have to specifically check for. You also have some self-proclaimed social media experts, probably not friends with everybody they're adding on there. Either way, you have like these set of accounts that can't identify most of their friends. The photo selection criteria that we talked about earlier does a good job of weeding out most of these, but not quite good enough. We have to do a little bit more to try to exclude these people who have over a certain threshold of friends and try to narrow the set of characteristics that we'll actually look for. Mostly because these like highly engaged users who have 5,000 friends also tend to be very, very active on Facebook, and they're commenting and interacting with people who they aren't that close with. You can also find pictures of people on the internet. It's one of the things we were most concerned about when we were designing this is what happens if you just take the names that are in the choice, search for each of them, and start comparing those names side by side. If Steve Ballmer is actually one of the choices in there, when you see all these pictures of Steve Ballmer, it's not going to take much of a leap to figure out that that's probably him in the photo. We prototyped out how fast you could actually do this in an automated way by scraping the names off the challenge page, pulling up an image search for each of those, and trying to compare them side by side. And it turns out that you're going to be, in the cases where it works, you're going to be just about as fast as a normal user going through the flow. Which means you can't try to correct for this by any type of timing issues. Fortunately, not everybody shows up when you search for their name. This is the other Alex Rice. She's a soft porn star on Cinemax and is far more popular than I will ever be. You will never find a picture of me just searching for Alex Rice. You are going to need some other bit of context in order to find me on a search engine. And how this ends up working in reality is that we end up paying very close attention to the pass and fail rates of these challenges for a number of different reasons. But we also tie them back to why that login was getting challenged in the first place. So the individual classifier that said this batch of logins is no good, challenge all of them, we pay very close attention to what the pass and success rate looks like and whether it's deviating from what the normal pass and success rate looks like for a normal set of users. Normal users pass this challenge most of the time. Someone trying to game and attack this is expected to fail slightly higher than that. Probably considerably more higher than that in the normal scenario. But best case scenario, they're not going to get as good as how normal users look going through this flow. because there are simply going to be some that you can't identify through this means. It's going to be longer. You're going to have more wrong. So this is another one that it's interesting in that you could pretty easily consider this a security vulnerability of an authentication challenge. You can obviously get through it in some cases, which puts us back in a point where you have to really assess in what places it appropriate to use a challenge like this that has obvious holes in it. Talk a bit about one of my favorite exploits that we found in the wild. This guy is a realtor. Has a professional Facebook account, not a lot of personal friends on there, mostly colleagues and other realtors. And he hit our login challenge while on vacation, which is what we expect. He's on vacation. That looks a little unusual. We're going to put the challenge in front of him. And everything from our photo selection criteria says that this guy should be able to identify these photos. He's checking in at events with people. He's in multiple pictures with the people who are tagged, side by side, smiling with them. He's uploaded the pictures himself, and he's done this over a consistent period of time. Like, these look like close friends of his. In reality, they're just colleagues that he doesn't actually know all that well, but pretends to know and interacts with on a pretty regular basis for business purposes, which we could probably run into some of this also. There's a lot of people that I run into conferences here that I might have friends with and have interacted in the past, but they're closer to acquaintances than colleagues. Most of that gets sorted out by trying to select the photos that you are highly engaged in. But for an account like this that is entirely a professional account that is actively engaged with all of these other realtors, you start to hit these edge cases where it doesn't work as expected. Fortunately, if you look at the top up there, he's got a giant picture of himself, as does every other realtor in North America. So if he goes back to the search scenario that we just talked about, takes the name and then puts realtor right after it, you very quickly get to a point where he can identify all of these people probably faster than he could in a normal context. He narrows it down to a few people, searches for those names, puts realtor on it, gets their realtor page with their nice huge picture up top, and selects them out pretty easily. The interesting part about this is that he can break into this because he has the context to put the word realtor after each of those. Normal person hitting this as part of a set of credentials wouldn't know to put realtor and wouldn't have as much success with an approach like this. But still, the type of edge cases you need to try to plan for. So we spent a lot of time trying to assess where we could actually use this challenge effectively. There's a lot of potentials for it, and there's a lot of temptation to try to use it more broadly. But the case that we ended up applying it to was mass phishing. Someone who has several hundred or several thousand sets of credentials, and they're trying to log into Facebook with all of them over some period of time. This is not a targeted scenario where it's I'm trying to get into this person's account. You'll probably have the social context you need to get past an authentication challenge. The login challenges that we're talking about at the beginning also aren't as tuned for that type of scenario anyway. So we are probably going to throw a different challenge in the first place. But for the mass phishing challenge, where we have a reason to believe that there are multiple accounts compromised in this based on this login pattern, that's where we rely pretty heavily on this challenge. Because what it really boils down to is that it's not solvable at scale. You could probably solve it for a few dozen accounts. If you have 100 accounts you're trying to get into, you can probably solve it for 50, but that pass rate is going to look a lot worse than what normal 100 users trying to get into their accounts are going to look like, and that ends up being something that we can flag. So even if it's just used to, in a theoretical scenario, to slow somebody down long enough to us to respond to that particular tech, it would still be incredibly useful. But what it ends up doing is it's so low friction, and normal users can pass this with such ease that it gets our false positive tolerance to that area that I was talking about, where we can run classifiers that are only right 5% of the time, which is just unheard of anywhere else being able to run with that type of accuracy. That's a bad classifier. It's only right 5% of the time. And it really ends up boiling down to that the amount of money that it will take you, either in human power or bandwidth or computing power, to try to get into a account out of a list of however many accounts you're trying to get into, doesn't end up being worth it for the attacker. So just by slowing them down and forcing them to invest these extra resources, we're currently at a point where phishing is no longer a problem on Facebook. A year and a half ago, it absolutely was. We were really struggling against mass phishing credentials, either from a large database dump or set of phished users or shared passwords between some porn site that decides to go rogue. It was a big problem for us, and it simply isn't anymore. All the fraud has shifted off of phishing, which is just a phenomenal thing to be able to say. But we're still in this point where you can't really use a challenge like this in targeted attacks. It's going to slow people down a little bit, but you have to be very careful about the scenarios where you're throwing this, where you're throwing this challenge and relying upon it to protect the user's account. You can do that at scale, but in a targeted basis, you need something else. So it doesn't replace normal two-factor authentication, which we've also rolled out in parallel, and we spent a lot of time trying to educate high-value accounts to go turn this on. If you turn on login approvals, you'll never get the social authentication challenge that we were just talking about. If you opt in to saying, like, I want more friction, I want to deal with the SMS delivery delays, or if you have one of those supported apps, you can use the code delivery and eliminate the delay entirely. If you opt into this extra friction, we rely on this rather than the other case. It would be ideal if we could use this for all users, if everybody had a mobile device that they're willing to opt into extra friction for. If you do, I encourage you to go flip this on. It's under account settings. And this ends up taking out enough of the targeted attack scenarios or supplementing everything else that we do to try to prevent targeted attacks that we don't rely on social authentication as much in that type of scenario. But it still goes back to everything we talked about at the beginning. Like, there is some delay and friction associated with two-factor authentication. Sooner or later, somebody will misplace their phone, wants to log in, and can't get it at this point. If you're actually on vacation in Eastern Europe and we challenge you there, even if you've opted in to login approvals, you're going to have a SMS delivery trouble in there unless you happen to be one of the privileged few on a global roaming plan. One of the other really interesting things I wanted to talk about, which is a slight variation of the first form of social authentication I was talking about, is more of a last resort approach to a social authentication. This is a complete flip from the low friction, lightweight, just good enough form of social authentication to the other side, which is a very heavyweight, very high friction, high amount of confidence approach to social authentication. This is when we've completely locked out an account, we've identified that it's potentially compromised, we've seen something far more suspicious than just a single unusual login. The account gets completely locked, and there's a few steps for recovery. This is one of the ones that we've started leaning on. This is actually one of the first forms of social authentication we started exploring, and it was pioneered by a Microsoft research paper back in 2009. Kind of coming full circle here. So it basically works. There's a few different variations on it that we end up using, but the basic flow to try to wrap your head around it is you're trying to get into your account. We ask you to choose three trusted friends. We're going to send a code to each of those friends. Then we tell you to call those friends and get the security codes from them. And then after you present those codes back to us, you're able to recover your account. Obviously, a bit of friction involved there. You're involving four people now instead of just the single person. There's six different out-of-band steps there where it's going out to friends, and then the person's reaching out to the friends and getting the code back and then coming back to us. There's a lot that can go wrong. But this type of challenge is far more secure than the social authentication flow, and only triggered when we have no other option. The type of scenario where we would normally be falling back on something like a security question, which is just bad. A bit more on how you actually end up making this a little more safe. We don't just take all your friends on there. We pre-select a list of what we defined as trustworthy friends, which is basically engaged and active friends, people that you have been engaging with on a regular basis, which is kind of a loose definition of trustworthy. Charlie put that in quotes. But it eliminates a lot of the obvious people messing with you. The second thing that we did, which is really key in this type of approach, is we bucket friends together based on how much they interact with each other. So you'll start off, you'll have 300 friends to choose from. You pick the first friend, and then we immediately eliminate all other people who have had any on-site interaction with that user. So you'll go from 300 people, now you can pick 200 people. Pick the second person, we eliminate everyone from that cluster, now you're down to 50 people. You pick your third friend from that final bucket. This eliminates a lot of the frat scenario of people playing a prank on you by getting three of your other friends and all trying to get into your account through a mechanism like this. It's also helped out by this challenge not being available in all scenarios. They have to have some other type of activity on the account to get the account into this state and then get their friends there. But having to grab friends from three distinct clusters ends up greatly reducing the possibility for collusion here. We also then throw the account into a 48-hour lockout period where anybody who has access to the account or attempts to use the account has the valid credentials for it, like it's not really in a completely irrecoverable state, can cancel the whole process and you end up having to go to manual review to actually get your account back, which is far more friction than this. So it's a slightly different way to approach social authentication that's not used in nearly the level of volume that the first one is, but is on the complete other side where you actually have a reasonable amount of confidence that this person's actually in control of their account, especially in a last resort type of scenario where you would normally be stuck on security question or birthday. I also wanted to talk about some other, back to the first authentication challenge, some secondary use cases that we started applying it to with interesting results. In addition to random attackers trying to get into your account, fake accounts also don't know who their friends are. If you're not a real user on Facebook and you're sending out unwanted friend requests, there's a ton of stuff that we do to try to identify and flag these accounts and present them with some type of friction. Putting a social authentication challenge into someone who's been aggressively friending people they probably shouldn't be friending puts them into a scenario where we're not quite asking them to authenticate themselves. We're asking them to go through a bit of friction to prove that they actually know who they're trying to friend. Our login classifiers work such that, or our fake account classifiers work such that they're very good at detecting fake activity once it starts hitting real users. So fake accounts one category of fake accounts have this pattern where they try to build up a fake network amongst themselves before they start interacting with fake users to try to look a little more legitimate before they start sending out impactful actions. Because we're a lot more aggressive at outbound actions to real accounts or accounts that we have more confidence in before cracking down on them. So you end up with these set of fake accounts that aren't interacting with real users, but only interacting with each other, that we're then putting this authentication challenge in front of them, not really for purposes of authenticating them, but for purposes of providing them a little bit of pain. And it's actually kind of hard for them at this point, even though they are in control of all the accounts, they know what name is associated with each picture. Someone has to manually sit down into this process now and say, like, oh yeah, this this person is this name and this person is this name, and they have to have some other type of source of truth to look it up. These are actual pictures uploaded on fake accounts with the name of the account overlaid right across the face. So instead of having some type of out-of-ban lookup table, he's going to be right in the challenge with the name on top of each profile picture that we're asking him to identify. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It is so unbelievably easy to detect something like this once he started doing it. And it wasn't really effective for any long period of time, but it's fascinating the lengths that people will try to go to solve a little bit of friction like this. And you end up back in this point where like a fake account on Facebook doesn't have a great amount of individual value, and any small amount of friction that you can put in front of it very quickly gets it to this point where it's no longer worth it to the attacker, and they go away. This guy stopped doing this pretty quickly when he realized that this is not going to work. But it's an interesting case where something that we built for an entirely different purpose ended up being incredibly useful in another purpose. And we all the other challenges that we throw for fake account classification are all around friction, not around authentication, and this ended up proving a very valuable bit of friction when used in the inverse case.